Welcome back to Between the Bar Lines, the podcast where we chat about important events, people, philosophies, and theories in music history. This season, we are focusing on the Renaissance era. If you've been listening along chronologically, you might notice that today we are taking a little bit of a step back in order to understand the evolution of the Mass. Today, we are going to crack into the polyphonic Mass. For centuries, we know that the church was using monophonic music, so one melodic line that's simple and unaccompanied and basically pure. Then entered polyphony. As a refresher, the term polyphony means many voices. Unlike chant, where a single melody is present, polyphony weaves multiple independent melodic lines together. This new musical texture created a richer, more complex sound that enhanced the emotional and spiritual depth of liturgical music. While the roots of polyphony can be traced back to the Notre Dame School of the 12th and 13th centuries with composers like Leonin and Perrotin, the first true polyphonic Mass settings appeared in the 14th century. One of the most important figures in this transformation was our friend Guillaume de Machaut. As I mentioned in last season, his Messe de Notre Dame, composed in the 1360s, was the first complete setting of the Mass Ordinary by a singular composer. So it took the five main sections of the Mass Ordinary and set them in a unified polyphonic structure. This was a radical shift from previous practices where individual movements were often composed separately by different musicians. Now, by the 15th century, composers such as John Dunstable in England and Guillaume Dufay in that Burgundian school, they expanded on Machaut's innovations. They refined polyphonic writing by developing smoother counterpoint, imitative textures, and more sophisticated harmonic structures. Dufay's Misse sur le Fas I Pal used a secular melody as a cantus firmus, basically a fixed musical foundation around which the other voices were intertwined. This grouping or linking of all of the movements in the Mass Ordinary was a new feature of Masses, hence creating what we can call a Mass cycle or a cyclic Mass. There are several different types of polyphonic and cyclic Masses, two of which we will address today. These are plain song and cantus firmus Masses. A plain song Mass is a setting of the Mass that is entirely based on plain song, which refers to that monophonic unaccompanied chant. Plain song Masses follow the traditional structure of the Mass Ordinary, but are composed in a chant style, maintaining the free rhythm and modal characteristics of medieval liturgical music. When we talk about plain song Masses, there are two primary types. We have those Gregorian chant Masses, and these are the most well-known, and they come from that Gregorian chant tradition that was extensively used in the Roman Catholic Church. The other primary type of that plain song Mass just comes from other chant traditions, so various other Christian traditions develop their own chant-based Mass settings. Unlike polyphonic Mass settings which emerged in the 14th and 15th centuries, a plain song Mass maintains that simplicity and directness of that early medieval chant, emphasizing the clarity of the text and a meditative quality suited for worship. Some well-known examples of these plain song Masses include settings found in the Liber Usualis, a compilation of Gregorian chants used in the Catholic liturgy. This was a book of Gregorian chant used in the Roman Catholic Church, containing most commonly used chants for the Mass and Divine Office, and it was also compiled by the Benedictine monks of the Salesmas in the 19th and early 20th centuries. If you remember me talking about this last season, this basically became the standard reference for chant in the pre-Vatican II Latin liturgy. Even though this book is no longer the primary chant book in modern Catholic liturgy, it remains an essential resource for those studying Gregorian chant in the history of sacred music. A cantus firmus Mass is a type of polyphonic Mass setting in which one pre-existing melody, known as the cantus firmus, serves as the structural foundation throughout the entire composition. This melody, typically placed in the tenor voice, is often drawn from Gregorian chant, secular songs, or even other liturgical sources. The other voices weave around the cantus firmus in increasingly elaborate polyphonic textures. Some key features of a cantus firmus Mass is its fixed melodic foundation. The cantus firmus remains consistent throughout the Mass, usually appearing in long, sustained notes in the tenor voice. There is also a unified structure because of this. The same melody is used across all movements, and the mass gains a sense of cohesion. What's also cool about the Cantus Firmus Mass, especially in the 15th century, is its sacred and secular influence. While many Cantus Firmus Masses use Gregorian chant, some actually use secular melodies. If you remember back in the previous episode, we talked about Dufay's Sur la face I parle, and actually he has this really cool thing that he did where he set that particular chanson as a mass. I'll put that in the episode notes for you to take a listen to. With that being said, if you haven't heard these excerpts or you're wondering where you might be able to hear them, be sure to check out the rest of season 2. These innovations are what paved the way for the golden age of polyphony in the 15th and 16th centuries, culminating in the works of our friends Josquin des Prez, Palestrina, and William Byrd. But it really all started in these early pioneers who dared to just kind of break away from what was normal and just play with multiple voices in the fabric of sacred music. The birth of polyphony and the polyphonic mass was more than just a musical shift. It reflected broader cultural and artistic transformations of the late medieval and early Renaissance periods. It mirrored the rise of humanism and the deepening relationship between text and music. Next episode, we'll chat about more important Franco-Flemish composers in the 16th century who led us to more and more innovations in the Renaissance. Join me next time on Between the Bar Lines.